It is my absolute pleasure to introduce the next session, being the Indigenous Knowledge and Perspectives of Circularity, Philosophy, Practices and Solutions. If you are a latecomer, please enter quietly. We have started. Find your way to a seat. There are many Indigenous cultures around the world that don't even have a word for waste. And I think that it's very akin that we've got one of the oldest or the oldest living culture on Earth right at our front door. So why don't we spend some time listening and learning from them? And in that vein, I'm going to quickly hand over to our panel so they get all the speaking and not me. So all the way over from Perth, Raquel Kerr, the Aboriginal Stakeholder and Engagement Advisor in WAGHD. I'm going to invite you up and you can introduce your panel. Thank you.
Talkaya. Wawi lekalan inyari jadarong burung bayam bangko jai. Wederang jandaki nyanyala bunjo dakum nyanyala joana wani ananu mantinga koli. Hi, my name is Raquel. I am a proud Jodarong and Bunurong woman from Central Victoria who went to Perth. I don't know whose mistake that was. There's all mine. And I'm here today to help moderate today's panel. But before I get into context of today's panel, I'd like to introduce the following people who will be joining me. So I'd like to introduce Damien from Good Human, Paul from Federation of Victorian Traditional Owner Corporations, Hayden from Wamara, and Liz Allen from Liz Allen Consulting. Make your way up here. They're the best mob, seriously. They're just great. So today we want to take you on a journey for the next hour. I want you to picture country. I want you to picture your favourite place on country that you go to, whether it's out in the ranges, whether it's bush, whether it's out by the beach, whether it's by the river. Now, I want you to imagine the water, if there is any water nearby. I want you to imagine the sounds and the sounds of ceremony, the conversations of trade, food share, and connection. We call that continuation of tradition and cultural practice. Today, it's seen as circular economy. So we want to take you on a journey today on how we delve into traditional practice and customs and application in a practical sense in circular economy. So that's enough from me. I would like to introduce you to Damien and Paul, who will give their first talk.
To you, mate. Thank you. All right, that's down this side.
Well, that side, okay. Wominindji, everyone. Ngatul Maktau, Paul Payton. Nadju Gunai, Nadju Manera, Nadju Tanganai, Wurundjeri Work Work. Nadju Tanganai, Waru Work Work. Kanipa, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name's Paul Payton. I'm a Gunai Manera man from the east of the state. And I'll just make sure that's working. Just a little bit about me. As a Monero man who's been brought up by and guided by my family and my culture to be able to lead systemic change in the landscape here in Victoria. My role as CEO of Federation of Victorian Traditional Owner Corporations is about changing the landscape here in Victoria to restore cultural authority and cultural responsibility back into the landscape and addressing some of the systemic injustices that have occurred on our people for hundreds of years, and about bringing us together as communities to go forward as a country, and to be able to heal country and to support each other to be able to achieve better outcomes for country and for community. My country up there in the Far East, that's that photo there of Mallacoota, and the icon there is about my country, and it was painted by my uncle, who talks about the diversity on country, from the mountains to the rivers to the lakes to the ocean and the plains, that sustained our people for thousands of generations. And it's such an honour to be able to be connected to such a long history of living on country, and to be able to take that responsibility forward in being able to care and manage country in the future. And my role is quite broad in being able to restore Indigenous knowledge and restore Indigenous authority over country. And I was lucky enough last week, as you can see in the photo up there, to be at the table with Prime Minister Albanese up in Canberra just last week. So to talk about the way forward post the referendum and to hear the Prime Minister's commitment on working with First Nations people across this country to take us forward on a journey of healing and future prosperity. My work at the Federation is about systemic reform, and by developing strategies that support the healing of countries, such as the Native Foods and Botanical Strategy, the Cultural Fire Strategy, Water is Life, are all roadmaps for us to build capacity and restore healing of country in Victoria and to go on that journey together. I'll hand over to Damien to introduce himself.
Okay. Thanks very much. My name is Damien Mallott. I'd just like to acknowledge traditional owners of lands in which we speak upon today and acknowledge all elders past, present and future. I grew up in Jarra country, which is Dalesford and Hepburn Springs. And there's a little picture of me as a young Anglo-Saxon male. And this is a picture I drew when I was 5 years old that I proudly took to primary school, where my teacher notated it with, this is a savage and this is me, I am different to a savage. So that was my early education. And, you know, Australian history started with the landing of Captain Cook. Fortunately, I had a really good, strong upbringing, and I was able to stick to my guns and what I believed in, which was around, you know, the wonders of connection to nature and natural systems, which came through in my industrial design work and a master's in eco-design, life cycle analysis, and looking at modular furniture and natural systems. So biomimicry was important to me, and the ecosystem thinking carried on later on when I delved into service design and digital strategy and digital transformation projects. So this was a little project working with Anthony Payton, many of you all know here today, which was mapping the fuss moving consumer good packaging ecosystem. So systems thinking was a part of what we did, and human-centered design served us very well in the last 10 years or so of kind of digital transformation projects, design projects, but it was always missing for me. I'm like, well, the nature and natural systems component of design is missing, and it's kind of quite essential that we include that in our economic systems. So, we had some great discussions with Paul. I met Paul 12, 13 years ago, and always had these discussions like about why kind of life-centred design is not at the forefront of things, and later this evolved into country-centred design. So.
Yeah, and I said to Damien, you know, First Nations people have always had a country-centred framework in the way that we operate, and it's really about a mutually sustaining relationship with country, and that relationship is really what our systems are built upon, you know, whether it be our relationship to sustain ourselves, but also our economic relationships with neighbouring groups as well. So we, our totem and moiety system has always been there to ensure that everyone held responsibility for country, and noting that if you look after country, country will look after you. So it's that mutual beneficiality that exists, and our reading and understanding of country has been refined over 4,000 generations, and it was, as always, place-based, and the picture there of 250 nations articulated, and that knowledge is through those stories, those songs, our language, and our place names. A place on my country, Mallacoota, which many of you would know, is a place that actually means a place of white clay. So it's about the knowledge system that's built into our stories, our songs, and our language that enables us to manage country effectively. And a modern representation, you'll just see some little pop-ups there, of demonstrating our understanding of country is through seasonal calendars and a few seasonal calendars there for Wurundjeri and Arnhem Land that articulate a systems thinking of how we understand and connect to country. So I'll just pop them up there just a bit larger. So some references for that one. So back in 2021, Federation had worked with traditional owners to launch the Cultural Landscape Strategy, which is a framework that aims to restore custodial relationship with country, and it provides a contemporary expression of traditional owners leading the application of our knowledge and practice in water and land management. And it promotes contemporary practices that reflect the management and modification of country by thousands of generations to benefit all inhabitants of country, both human and non-human. And it was at that time that, you know, Damien and I have been friends, so we've caught up regularly and talked about what we were working on at work and what's happening in our lives. And I talked about the cultural landscape strategy and all the interconnectedness there on the right-hand side. People are strong, country is healing, culture is strong. And Damien was sharing his work that he'd done on, with Hepburn Shire, so I'll let him talk about that.
So it was quite interesting working with Mount Alexander Shire and Hepburn Shire and the wonderful ZNet and Hepburn Energy and circular economy projects for regional Victoria. We started mapping out circular strategies, and I was just thinking that there were parts of these kind of what we called foundation loops that had opportunities to be expanded upon. So we, of course, the foundation loops being, you know, regenerative, renewable, relocalising, reconnecting, and recognition and reconciliation, which I engaged Paul to help me with, kind of map that out. And it's like, well, there's a lot more to Indigenous knowledge and stories that could really help and benefit, understanding and expanding circular economy and regenerative economy activity in central regional Victoria and Australia. So, and not only that, there's a real leadership opportunity for Indigenous people to actually drive that forward and be really proud of that space. So that's where we got to. Click, over to you.
So that's where we came up with the idea, the conversation started to emerge around the Indigenous donut, and Damien's going to sort of touch on that in the next slide. But, you know, it's a country-centred circular economy model. And we'll introduce that to you today. And it draws on millennia of learning, of managing and living and thriving on country. And to quote myself there, it's been created to enable a better understanding that our relationship with country over generations gives us knowledge and authority to give guidance about incorporating the connection and care of country principles into circular and regenerative economy practice. So I guess, you know, we're inviting wider Australia to walk together and sort of almost a welcome back to the table to talk about, you know, how we've cared for country for thousands of generations and how we can work together going forward. And I note the time, so I'm going to move quickly.
So this isn't actually a translation of Kate Raworth's Donut Economics. It started that way, but it's actually evolved into more of a kind of shared value service, circular service innovation type model. It's continuing to evolve and adapt as we go project by project. So the model, yeah.
Still working it out.
Yeah.
So we started with country at the centre, the country being at the centre of the circular economy model, and then looking at the connections outward from country and the communities that bridge those connections to the neighbouring communities. And the exchanges that occur through those relationships, and understanding that community is the kind of connector between knowledge on country and connections between other groups and their knowledge on country as well, and then also building in the seasonality aspect of country as well, and noting that we as people are adaptive and receptive to change, and seasons affect us every day. And we need to be constantly adaptive and responsive to that to be able to apply the model. And so, therefore, a seasonal layer needed to come into that design. Oops.
So, yeah, we workshopped some thinking around country-centered circular economy strategies, and eventually come to these kind of 12 strategies which can be used and applied over traditional circular economy innovation approaches. So this, these indigenous values are really powerful and really important when thinking about products and services. So I'm running out of time very quickly, but you know, stewardship, seasons, species, source, sharing, social impact, which is incredibly important, which we'll touch on with the great work Hayden's doing, supply chains, systems, scale, sensing and responding. Indigenous people are always in constant participation with their environment, so, you know, agile was pretty much their natural way of being, synergy and time, and song lines and stories, which...
Yeah. Oh, this is you too.
Oh, is it? God, time is running fast. So basically, this is just another overlay of what looking at the you know, country-centred 12 S strategies and how they can actually work with your traditional kind of circular economy and regenerative economy strategies. So, yeah, that's just something we can look at later a bit more, I guess.
So we've expanded out the layer of the donut model as well to those external, you know, applying it to a into a modern day type arrangement and you know, relationships and exchange type of situation, and therefore you get that outer model. But also we've incorporated the participation loop, which is that understanding that we participate on country and that and think about sort of the wheel that turns on itself and what is that kind of that space in between, depending on the seasons, what part of country we're talking about, and the conversation that's occurring at that time, and how do we understand that in that time and in that place, which is really really important to be able to get to the answer that you're seeking. Did you want to say anything about that right hand side?
Yeah, so we've started looking, obviously, a big theme of this conference is around kind of implementation, started working with different people in different scenarios on how this could be implemented. And I guess, like Paul said, the actual participation loop is the beauty of this model. It actually creates that slice through all those different systems and entities to be able to kind of innovate and to think about holistically what new products and services could look like when they are country-centred. And the country-centred being the common denominator, whether what race or culture or background you're from, it's a great common ground to actually get things done and to implement and to create the change we need.
You're next. You keep going.
Okay. So this is some examples of some of those implementations that we've been working on, some of the frameworks and some of the kind of templates and processes we've been working with. We'll talk to Hayden in a minute on one of those kind of implementation examples. And over to you.
So we've worked up the model, and it's about taking that, testing that model forward, and we've started to open up those conversations with businesses such as Hayden and traditional owner business, just to be able to look at how what's the adaptability at place and incorporate into First Nations businesses. And so we're at a time where we're still refining the model. We're testing that with our partners, and also what's going to support the implementation of the model is we've been working up some toolkits to be able to support that application of the model into the business to support that over time. So it's a bit of a time frame, and what it's really, you know, really about is moving forward is like I said before, is that invitation for the sector, both the circular economy sector and the Indigenous business sector, to be able to move forward and come together and move forward as one. So we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Kanitba means thank you. Contact details up there, and looking forward to our conversation with Raquel shortly.
I think it sets the framework for our next presenter, which is Hayden. The floor is literally all yours.
Thank you. How are you all going? Before I introduce myself and the business, I too would like to acknowledge that we are on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, and I pay my respects to the elders, past, present, and all emerging leaders we have in our community, and obviously extend that to any other Indigenous person here today. My name is Hayden Hedder. I'm the Managing Director for Wamara. I'm a proud Wurundjeri man from South Central New South Wales. But I've called Melbourne home now for the better part of almost 20 years. And I'm really, really proud to not only live here, but also work here. I grew up in Albury-Wodonga. As I said, I moved to Melbourne early 2000s. I've got a young family here, and everything that I do in regards to our business is for not only my family, but for my community. We do have a really strong focus around people. We talk about the circular economy. It's not just wealth. It's really about how we're changing behaviours and we're creating what is now a new norm for our people and for their families. And that is really centred around role models and leaders. Overview of today, I'll talk about the purpose or the intention of our business. And I guess spend a bit of time talking through the social impact of our company. Who we are. So Wamara is a Wurundjeri word. It means to build. And we use this word respectfully, firstly, that we're building infrastructure, but more importantly, we're building the capabilities of our community. We are an Indigenous business. We are led by Indigenous people, me being the majority shareholder and also managing director, but we also have a management structure that is proudly Indigenous. We promote ourselves as a self-performing civil and landscaping contractor, and the reason self-performing is important is it enables us to control the environment in which we employ people, but more importantly, we're training and developing people. So we've got a really strong emphasis on building sustainable careers for our community. In construction, it is heavily reliant on labour hire. Labour hire serves a wonderful purpose in our industry, but it can be quite transient and it responds to the peaks and troughs of construction. I wanted to create a business that was, providing a different solution to Aboriginal participation. The three key pillars that we created when starting this business, which are uncompromised, is firstly creating continuity of employment. And I think we'd all agree here today that employment or sustainable employment, job security is incredibly important. Obviously creates financial independence and stability. But what it also does, particularly for a number of our Aboriginal employees who this is their first full-time job, it actually gives them routine, it gives them structure, and it gives them hope. The second part there is upskilling. Upskilling, again, it sounds pretty... It sounds like it could be and it should be an easy task, but again, in this environment, in construction, upskilling is challenging because it costs money. How we do that, each of our employees are engaged or have an individualised career plan, and that career plan is really designed at capturing their aspirations, which then allows us to put measures in place to help them reach their aspirations. And the last pillar there, which is the most important part of our business and for our people, it's providing cultural safety. Cultural safety is defined many ways, but for us, it's about Aboriginal people leading Aboriginal people. I've got one more minute, I'm just going to push through this pretty quickly. Again, that is the purpose and the intent. And actually, the business was established to provide a genuine solution to social procurement. And again, it's more about the impact that our business is having now for future generations. Size and shape of the business, 97 employees, 55 of which are Indigenous. So we're incredibly proud of that, and the business is continuing to grow. Cultural identity, as an Indigenous business, it goes without saying that we have a strong focus on celebrating and acknowledging our culture and who we are. And that's really important for our staff as well, particularly for some of our employees who are starting their identity journey, obviously through the impacts of colonialisation, some of those we do have a ripple effect into community about identity. So that's what, again, a business like ours is able to do. It's not just about building infrastructure or even building the capabilities of people. It's helping people go on this journey. It's just an illustration of where we all come from. Traditional owner engagement, it's incredibly important. It's our responsibility to engage traditional owners respectfully. We look to engage traditional owners more around employment opportunities, but we're also gathering knowledge and stories, or rather we're encouraging our clients to engage with traditional owners to gather stories and knowledge and implementing them into the design of some of the infrastructure that's been built around town. Some of the projects where we have engaged traditional owners into direct employment. Ewan Country's over at Nowra. We delivered a small road project in Nowra. Griffith in New South Wales. Wiradjuri Country. Chisholm Road Prison Project down near Geelong, engaging the Wadawurrung people. So again, that is the first thing that we do when we're working away from Melbourne, is that we'll go straight to the traditional owner groups to look at employment. Some of the initiatives that we've created, Bullable Program and Launch Program, again, it's about instilling training and development into our people that's meaningful, but it has much more meaning because it's not just about providing training and development so they can do their job better in our business. It's about giving people skills and experiences that they can take back into their community. We've got examples of providing training or certain training and certifications to our carpenters. Building and the diploma in building and construction, for example, it doesn't help them do their job any better in our business. I don't need them to have their building license, but it's one step closer for those individuals to potentially start their own business one day. Now, we did do some modelling recently and with Damien and Paul. One thing that is very interesting, and it's not surprising, is that the circularity of construction has one thing in common, particularly for a business like ours, is that we do have a deep-seated connection for care of country. And we're always looking at minimising the footprint that we have by building infrastructure. We're either influencing project teams, government having different initiatives and policies that directly impact businesses like ours, like the social procurement framework, and naturally encouraging our clients to engage with traditional owners to embed stories and knowledge into the design of projects. And there are some examples which hopefully I can talk to in a moment, but I'll call Damien to talk to the next slide.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Aidan. So, yeah, we're fortunate enough to work with Hayden in mapping out his current kind of services at Wamara, how he works with those engagement of traditional owners and the various partners, and mapped out those activities. And one thing that became really apparent very early on was the opportunity for shared value initiatives. So, for example, Hayden does great work in training his staff and upskilling his staff. So there's an opportunity there to train staff in the elements and practices of circular economy and regenerative economy, and to be proud of that history and heritage of doing that for millennia. So there's an opportunity there to become experts as they move around the country on a project by project basis around, tapping into kind of natural resources and to actually work with their traditional owners on the actual location of projects, on what are the species, what are the seasons, what are the different elements of that country that's important to that project. So huge shared kind of value opportunity there as well. So I won't actually talk too much more about that and hand it back to you, given the time. So
thank you.
Thanks.
It was a really interesting exercise, and it's only something we've just started, so I look forward to seeing that unfold.
Yeah.
I'll just wrap up now by just talking through, closing out by a couple of initiatives. And we, again, talking about the circularity of a business like ours, it's much more than just building infrastructure. We also look at how we can embed our culture or impart our culture onto our non-Indigenous staff respectfully. 97 staff, 55 of which are Indigenous, so we do have a non-Indigenous cohort. And we do practice, I guess, culture at various times through the year, and one of them being NAIDOC Week, and you can see us there. Doesn't look like much, but actually what we are doing is doing a cup Murray, so food traditionally cooked in a ground oven, so that there is food under that tarp. That's a wonderful opportunity for our non-Indigenous staff to, I guess, embed themselves into and participate also into our culture. It is unique to a construction business doing activities like this, but it is incredibly important to me and obviously to our Indigenous cohort. Cultural safety I touched on before, Aboriginal people leading Aboriginal people. And just closing out with a couple of projects, we were lucky enough, fortunate enough to be awarded the Green Line Project for Melbourne City Council, marquee landscape project, changing the, the landscape of the Yarra River. The wonderful project, if we talk about true circularity in regards to embedding traditional cultural stories and knowledge into the design, because that's what's happening right now with the Wurundjeri people. Then naturally a business like ours who is engaging in Indigenous workforce, providing intergenerational wealth, and not only that, building leaders, actually building that. So that's a really neat example of multiple benefits a business like ours has when working on these type of projects. And that's another one, Bell to Preston. Social impact, really quickly while I finish, social impact for us is employment, sustainable employment, training and development, but there's also the social impact of what happens at home, where we have six of our employees, Aboriginal employees, who have purchased their first home since working for Wamara. Wonderful achievement for any individual, but for these particular individuals, they're the first in their Aboriginal family, the history of Aboriginal family. So that is a wonderful achievement. That is the social impact. That's the importance a business like ours have, and there are so many wonderful Aboriginal businesses who are doing the same thing for community. And that's probably a good place to end, is that this is the legacy. Trying to build sustainable careers for our community, building leaders of tomorrow, and hopefully providing intergenerational wealth to our community and breaking the back of poverty. Thank you.
Did you want it?
Okay. Good work, mate.
Hello, everybody. Nice to be here. I'd like to acknowledge that I am on country. I'm on Wurundjeri country. I'm a proud Wurundjeri Jarjarung woman and pay respect to my elders, past and present. I am the seventh generation Wurundjeri woman, so really proud to be that and carry on the legacy of my ancestors and old people. So I stand here today being the daughter of a parent, a stolen generation parent, born on Gunai Kurnai country, so if anyone knows where that is, East Gippsland, yep, shout out. And I wanted to share with you, I guess, some of my work and in a practical sense, but also my journey to rights and recognition. So as a Wurundjeri woman, I've always known I was Wurundjeri. In 2010, with research, my family lineage was connected to Jarjarung country, which we call upside down country. And you can imagine that Bendigo is an upside down country because it's been dug up underneath. And so in 2010, I activated my rights as a traditional owner under the Recognition Settlement Agreement, or Traditional Owner Settlement Agreement. And what that did was give me rights and voice to be at the table when it comes to land governance. So I can see a lot of people nodding their head, and my kind of pitch today is around what you guys can do and what your corporations can do to help cultural and social and economic sustainability for the lands that we all care for. But I want to share with you also some of the work that I've been doing in the past. So I have been in government and policies. I led a lot of strategies and Victorian Aboriginal Affairs Framework, the Social Procurement Framework, and actually implementing targets around Aboriginal participation to create wealth, pretty much. Inherit wealth is something that our Aboriginal families didn't have the luxury of having, and unfortunately, due to policies, we were excluded from even opportunities to working and employment and working in the business sector. So I'm currently one of nine Aboriginal advisors on the Victorian Aboriginal Employment Economic Council. So if you get a moment, please Google Urim Urim Boy. It's a two-year strategy that we are working with Victorian government to roll out. And along with that actually comes with a state government budget, which is amazing that we've actually had that. I've worked in the field for 30 years and we've never actually had an Aboriginal economic development approach. So we now have that. So I encourage you to jump on the DJ Sir website as well and have a look at that, because that can actually help you and your organisations on the journey as well. So I've also had the opportunity to be a ministerial advisor on the Victorian Aboriginal Heritage Council. Does anyone know what that is? Nod head, raise your hand. Oh, anyone? Yay! Okay, there's a few. Probably about the size of the Indigenous population versus the non-Indigenous population, put their hand up there, so that was good. What that does is actually allow us to determine registered Aboriginal parties when it comes to caring and managing country. And I'll flick to my slides now because I'll probably go off script and go over time. But I do encourage lots of questions as well a bit later. Okay, oops, we've got the wrong slide, but that's okay. This is a couple of pictures. So Annie Barat, and people would know Annie Barat as being William Barak's sister. So William Barak is a quite memorable character and also has a lot of design around here as well. What I wanted to talk to you about was some of these, the landscape of policy and land governance. Has anyone heard registered Aboriginal party before? I'm just going to do the shout out. Yep. Have you worked with any registered Aboriginal parties? One or two, three, four, good. Recognition settlement agreement or traditional owner settlement agreements? Has anyone been complied to work under legislation when it comes to developing or caring for country? Good. This is good. So it's going to be a good, interesting learning. Reconciliation action plans. Everyone knows what they are. A lot of corporates have those. In my experience, they're really great. But also they can be a bit challenging when it comes to making sure that we've got the available networks, relationships and resources when it comes to RAPs. So whose organisation has an ESG? Yay, okay. So can anyone tell me if their ESG actually recognises traditional owners and land governance in their ESG? Yes? Got a few? Great, perfect. And was that informed by your traditional owners? Okay. So a lot of my work, I've got 1 minute and 28 seconds. So a lot of my work has been around supporting corporates. So not only have I had policy and government, I've activated my rights as a traditional owner. I can make decisions on land use activity agreements and negotiations with community partnerships, because these are all the things that a lot of people or corporates want. So actually understanding why corporates are doing, and this is just my experience, it's not all of it, but when I speak to corporates, a lot of it is just because there's compliance. There's government tendering requirements, or there's some other motivation, I guess, to either social or legal license when it comes to land governance or access. Some say because the competitors are doing it, and it's a great commercial opportunity, particularly if you're industry and you're pitching to government for projects. And we talk about the clean economy. That's worth billions of money coming into our economy. And unfortunately, traditional owners are not always at the cold face of those opportunities. So I know that is moving quite slowly. I have been one of five traditional owners being on one renewable energy project at the moment, very large, going the Western way, hint. So it's really, really interesting to be part of that before development and things progress, if wind or solar or whatever, you know, is going there. So this is the reasons why I work with traditional owners and their reasons And you guys talked about it before, caring for country is our number one thing, making sure that our people are looked after and our culture stays alive and recognised. I don't know about you guys, but I can see a big difference. So they're the kind of gaps that we try and work through when I'm talking about traditional owners, or I work with traditional owners or corporates. So there's a different way of working, I guess, what I'm suggesting. And some of the opportunities, obviously there's a huge amount of opportunities to work with traditional owners, invest in the value, the knowledge, the assets, I'm on a cultural burn project at the moment, building traditional owner capability and capacity. We're writing and engaging strategies and plans and, you know, opportunities for greater participation for Aboriginal people, and whether that's employment just making sure that the country can heal, I think is really important. The only other thing I want to point out is, has anyone heard of a Del Cunha Jar management plan? Rack?
There was one person out the back as well, so it's not just me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yay. Amazing.
Good. I guess I just want to encourage you that, you know, most people in community that I work with will know ESGs and know, you know, you guys know your corporate policies and strategies and what you guys are operating under. Traditional owners have their own strategies and frameworks and policies as well. So it might be a tourism strategy that we've got, a water resource strategy that we've got. There's a variety of those strategies. So I'm just kind of encouraging to have a look at those traditional owner strategies before making, you know, kind of decisions or informing some of your strategies and really reaching out to them. I think that's my key message today. Thank you.
I'm going to press the magic button. That takes us to our Q&A. And I think some of the key messages that have come from this is that regardless whether you have experience engaging with traditional owner groups from a legal perspective or from a place of goodwill or relationship building, those conversations about us, about country, cannot happen without us. And that's so important to take into mind. It's not a too hard basket type thing. We don't bite. We are actually really lovely, and we can honestly talk about this for hours, which is why I'm cutting Q&A a little short. But it really leads into a couple of questions that have come through. One that is, I think, really important when we talk about inclusivity is, are there plans or conversations to include the CCCE framework into the Federal Circular Economy Ministerial Advisory Group? Are we aware that these are conversations that have started, or we're kind of just waiting in the back burn?
I think we're aware of what's happening at the Commonwealth level in regards to the commitments made, and equally here at the state level, there's a real drive towards circular economies, and we understand that those departments, are looking for Indigenous input into those models and those strategies going forward. But I'm actually yet to see any kind of active kind of engagement with groups around that. And I think, you know, the model that we put forward today gives us a basis or a foundation for that conversation to be able to, as a starting point, to be able to come to the table with some understanding of circular economies, because translating it from, as we put it, our Indigenous way of thinking, which has always been practiced, but translating it into a circular economy conversation, so that the values are the same, I feel, but it's how do we bring that in, and I'm really keen to be able to take that next step, ensure that those initiatives that are being driven by state and Commonwealth governments are bringing Indigenous values, incorporating Indigenous values into those pieces of work that will ultimately have that effect back on country and be able to ensure that Indigenous communities are leading, and that that conversation and recognises that Indigenous communities can actually play a real leadership role in circular economies moving forward.
Absolutely. I feel like there's also a question that Liz would be really great to answer. How do you build the First Nations approaches into procurement practices?
Is that to me?
Yeah, that's for you.
First, into say it again.
How do you build First Nations approaches into procurement practices?
Interesting. So one is to actually understand the landscape of, I guess, the business sector. And second is to understand the capability and capacity, and third is to put some participation requirements, if that answers that question. But also, you know, having it really clear that this is a priority as well. It has to have, unfortunately, it has to have a target for anything to happen. And it's, you know, not always easy to track data and social outcomes and you know, employment hours and those kind of things as well. But, you know, we're getting better at doing that as well.
Yeah, I think you probably look at it in two ways, particularly as an Indigenous business who is working in a mainstream environment, that I often encourage our clients to start asking questions about the social impact when engaging a business like ours. So, yes, targets are advantageous to a company like ours. However, targets create a false ceiling. And I've seen this play out, that once a target is met, there's really no need to engage those businesses any further. Those behaviours are starting to change a little bit, but I often encourage our clients, again, to start removing this idea of ticking the box, meeting those targets and moving on. Actually spend time talking to your Indigenous businesses who you are engaging, and start understanding the social impact that business is having on community. You know, for example, engaging our company to deliver a $5 million landscape project over 8 months, you know, there's two targets there that you can tick off really quickly. Your spend, the $4 million, and the Aboriginal hours, which we could declare. The social impact is that that project would allow me to employ 10 new Aboriginal people into my business, therefore into the industry, and over 8 months provide a level of training and development that we would those individuals would otherwise miss out on. That's the social impact. So when you are talking about procurement strategies, start understanding what it actually means.
Yeah, it's community looking after community. Mm. It's a job that goes to servicing and providing for family very much like any other job, but also has a profound example that's set for other mob as well, which is fantastic. A question for Paul and Damien directly. What strategies do you find engage mainstream Australians well in this kind of holistic approach, especially given many people's limited budget of attention?
You should have an answer that.
You can interp dance it out. Like, up to you.
It's time to break out the dance.
You want
to
answer?
I can start with that, if you like.
Sure.
I think stewardship in general, caring for country in general, has many multipliers for investment from business. So when you start caring about environment, you do have those, you know, side benefits, complementary benefits of, you know, of social, you know, improved social well-being. You know, there's an interesting story where some environmentalists in South America, I think it was in Brazil, were working very hard to try and preserve species in a forest, but they were kind of disappearing because there was a lot of Indigenous people forced off their lands and they were hunting and eating those species for you know, as bushmeat. So I think you need to really look after. The Indigenous model was always about caring and sharing and, you know, sharing resources. So I think when you start caring for country and you start using some of those strategies around kind of sharing and, you know, you can actually uplift the whole community. And I think that's a big part of what shared value is in a lot of organisations. When they look at, for example, the great work the Shared Value Project does, there is that, you know, attempt to actually lift up all of the community together, which has you know, multiple business wins as well. So that's, I guess that's starting on that kind of answer.
Yeah, I think there's I was going to go to shared values as well. I think, you know, there's a lot of shared values, and sometimes we don't see that similarity between Indigenous values and values that are being described in this and many other sectors, whether it be environment, circular economy, sustainability. All of the values are similar. So it's about recognising, understanding, respecting that the knowledge that's been held, and that's what we're, I guess, trying to promote here in the circular economy model, is that those values align, and if we understand them and work towards incorporating them, then we're going to both reach the same outcome. And I think, you know, something that comes to mind, something that we've worked on, which is around water, and water is life, and they have this thing called environmental flows and economic flows to manage water on country, and we've always maintained that there needs to be an element of cultural flows, and cultural flows will also achieve economic and environmental outcomes, and that's something that needs to be determined by traditional owners as what's a cultural flow. But often the policy and the legislation doesn't support cultural flows on the basis that it won't deliver the same outcomes. But it's something that we need to continue to converse about to be able to understand that the values are still there. We just need to be able to adapt and adopt the policy and legislation to be able to achieve the same thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I often find that there is a disconnect when we look at goals and objectives, and it's always seen as this is what we want and this is what other people want. And I think the reality is because there is, what I personally find is a lack of connection to culture. So for an example, us as a mob, we're born with an innate connection to culture. For everybody who isn't Indigenous in this space, you also have a connection to this country and to this culture. It's just based on the foundations, the morals, the principles, and the continuation of what our people have always done. So if you're trying to find a search going, why should we connect? It's going, you need to connect in the same way that we do. It's the exact same principle. Mm. We can still work together through that sense. Question for Hayden. Does your business use the list of S's from the first presentation, the big list of S's? And if so, could you provide some practical examples that other businesses could learn from?
The short answer is we do, but unknowingly. And I was only aware of the S's in the modelling that I did recently with Damien. So I probably can't talk to providing suggestions to others, but I think it's ingrained in all of us, similar to what you just said around our connection as Indigenous people to land, to each other, to each other's cultures. It's not something that you really need to think too much about. It almost comes naturally.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably something you do probably more inherently as an Indigenous business. So you do it anyway.
Yeah.
But now we've got it sort of identified and written down, and it's something that we can utilise to be in business to be able to, talk about when you're tendering for work, and those government contracts are looking for businesses to meet those expectations, and there you've got the kind of the language. And the strategies to be able to demonstrate what you do.
Yeah, totally. I think it's taking a holistic approach to what a business like ours, an Indigenous business, can actually offer the broader industry, because we are very much two-dimensional in our way of thinking, as in from a business operational point of view. We come with a skill set, we build the infrastructure, hopefully to time, safety, budget, and then we move on. But as I said, there are things that we do naturally because we represent our culture.
Beautiful. And our last question, because I'm aware of time, even though our timer kind of keeps like bumping between 2 and 4. I was like, do we have time? We have somewhat time. Last question for this session is, Liz, is there a central resource we can locate traditional owner strategies that you mentioned at the end of your presentation?
Okay, so I think you firstly need to understand who the registered Aboriginal parties are. So obviously Victorian First Peoples State Relations website or DPC website will have all of that. Secondary, most of the traditional owners that you will find and their maps, they most would have websites, and those websites would display all that, a lot of information around who their mob is, what their aspirations are, what their strategies are, as well as the Federation, who represent a majority of traditional owners in Victoria as well, would be a really good source.
Beautiful. The internet is your best friend. On that note, I'd like to thank you all for joining me up on the panel today. Dorma Nakinya, and thank you all for tuning in and your questions. Thank you.
Good job.